Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. But in for Amy this morning, again, is our friend Charles Thomas, former ABC7 political reporter, radio talk show host. Charles, good morning.
Hey, just trying to do Amy justice, man. She'll be back next week.
You're affording yourself well. Yes, I think she gets back from her visit with Macron and company in Gay Paris next week. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that didn't go how the White House must have hoped it would have went. The impromptu address to the nation yesterday by President Biden, Mr. 10%, the big guy, it was supposed to be celebratory. The special counsel's reports, Robert Hur, remember him? Oh, yeah, there was a special counsel appointed to investigate Biden's handling of classified documents. Well, came out with this report. It had been in Telegraph for the last several days, and it was going to be somewhat critical, but he was ultimately going to not recommend charges, and there would be distinctions in there that between how how Biden handled classified documents versus how Trump did, and this was going to be very good. But but they decided to have President Biden address the press corps as well and take questions. And things started to go off the rail a little bit in his prepared remarks and then went significantly more off the rails, in my estimation, during the brief Q&A session. Here's how it began, Joe Biden stepping to the podium and declaring victory.
As you know, the special counsel released his findings today about their look into my handling of classified documents. I was pleased to see he reached a firm conclusion that no charges should be brought against me in this case. This was an exhaustive investigation going back more than 40 years. Even into the 1970s, when I was still a new United States senator. The special counsel acknowledged I cooperated completely. I did not throw up any roadblocks. I sought no delays. In fact, I was so determined to give the special counsel what he needed, I went forward with a five-hour in-person interview over 2 days on October the 8th and 9th of last year.
Yeah. He did, and that's where the problems begin, because that's what's documented in the report, just how problematic is Biden's memory. Now, before we get to those clips that, of course, are dominating the discussion about Joe Biden, I mean, even dominating the discussion prior to Joe Biden addressing the nation, with some people suggesting Joe Biden's addressing the nation, this impromptu press conference, is he going to announce that he's not running again? No, quite the opposite. I think, Charles, and you know, you take this before we get to those clips that are drawing so much conversation. The choice to do this impromptu press conference, but to do it where he would then take questions from the press rather than doing it from the Oval Office, keeping it nice and tight, 10 minutes, go to sleep, and will, even though there are these assertions made in the special counsel's report about his competence, it becomes a press saying one thing after you seeing Biden give this 10-minute speech, and we can win the war on that issue over the next several days in siloed rather than putting Biden on the front lines, particularly at night, that late at night, to address the press. Just in terms of a political calculation, don't you see that as a mistake?
Well, they say that people with dementia do better at night at the end of the day as opposed to the very beginning.
There's also this thing called sundowners.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where, I mean, I don't know. I think he had a bad day all the way around. yesterday. I mean, this assessment by the special counsel of who he is and how he's doing cognitively was devastating, I thought.
Devastating.
It confirmed what everybody knows, or at least even on the Democrat side, whispers. Here's an independent, officially charged investigator who basically is saying out loud in a very official way what we all know. Right?
Well, right. I mean, what we've all witnessed for years. I mean, the gaffes and the, I mean, frankly, the problem with Joe Biden is he's made so many gaffes over so many years. I mean, going back decades, he's such a boob that it's difficult to know if it's just Joe Biden the boob or Joe Biden the boob whose mental competence is also in significant decline. And of course, everybody's is going to decline to some extent between the time you're 50 and 80. But such that he is unfit for office is what we're talking about. That's the standard. This is interesting what Herr wrote in his report. And really, is this his job? Is this Robert Herr's job? By the way, this is a former U.S. attorney from the state of Maryland. So it's not like this is some Trump flack. Of course not. Garland wouldn't have appointed him. This is from the report. Mr. Biden's memory was significantly limited both during his recorded interviews with the ghostwriter in 2017 and in his interview with our office in 2023. His cooperation with our investigation, including by reporting to the government that Afghanistan documents were in his Delaware garage, will likely convince some jurors that he made an innocent mistake rather than acting willfully, that is, with the intent to break the law as the statute requires. Another viable defense is that Mr. Biden might not have retained the classified documents in his Virginia home at all. They could have been stored by mistake without his knowledge at his Delaware home since the time he was vice president, as were other classified documents recovered during our investigation. He goes on to make other excuses for Biden. We've considered that at trial, Mr. Biden would likely present himself to a jury as he did during our interview of him as a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory. Based on our direct interactions with and observations of him, he is someone for whom many jurors would want to identify reasonable doubt. It would be difficult to convince a jury that they should convict him, by then a former president, well into his 80s, of a serious felony that requires a mental state of willfulness. Ooh. So this comes down to this sort of remarkable contradiction, which is, the special prosecutor is declaring Joe Biden is unfit for trial, whilst we're supposed to believe he is fit to be the leader of the free world.
And
square that circle.
Yeah, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but there was another world leader who might be considered an adversary of Joe Biden, who remembered chapter and verse of Eastern European history. During an interview that I watched overnight. What a contrast. And you mean that this is the guy that Joe Biden is up against in world affairs? Whoa, man, that's frightening. It's frightening.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Bill and Glenn Allen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think that special counsel report was used by the Obama people surrounding Biden to put him out there late at night when they normally try to keep him hidden. They know that he declines a lot in the evening. So it meant what the special counsel report said. They threw him out there to the wolves because from what I could see, the press actually started asking him questions when normally they just let him waltz off, stumble off the stage.
Oh, yeah, the they is back. The they, really. This Obama they has to be defined. People have to connect dots for me. I mean, you can theorize all you want, but I don't think so. I don't think so. The Obama people. You know who is the gatekeeper to Joe Biden? It's not Michelle Obama. It's not Valerie Jarrett. It's not KJP. It's not Susan Rice. You get where I'm going? It's Jill Biden. Jill Biden.
The doctor.
His wife. Yeah. Not a doctor.
Yeah. The deal is, you know, she keeps him, you know, medicated, and they make the policy. Because you know, he obviously isn't in control of what he's doing. I mean, it just is not mentally competent to do it. So if you think that he's the one who's making the policy, it's just...
That's not what I said. Thanks for the call, Bill. That's not what I said. I've grown really weary of the people waiting for the Obama conspiratorialists waiting for Godot. Spoiler alert: Godot never arrives. In case you haven't seen it or read it, the point is not that this is not Joe Obama term three, which it is, and I've said that from the outset. I said that as a candidate that this was an extension, and it would be a lot of the same people. That's not the point. The point is, you think they are orchestrating something, and they are not orchestrating anything. They may be trying to. Some people may want to see him out of the race. Some people may have wanted to see him out of the race a long time ago. Now they're at the timing of this, they're in a real difficult situation, especially if you want him to be switched out for someone other than Kamala Harris. So, you know, that's, you know, the puppeteers, those Obama party pulling all the strings, they're either not very good at it or they actually haven't been able to do it. Maybe they're not even trying.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, Annie, and for Amy this morning. Charles Thomas, former ABC7 political reporter. We're discussing that rather eventful press conference that President Biden had yesterday. And the talk really is not about the particulars of his handling of classified information, which is the subject mainly of the special prosecutor's report, saying that he doesn't see any reason to move forward with criminal charges because basically he's a doddering old man who's unfit for trial and a sympathetic figure. So the question is, setting aside the classified documents thing right now, is President Biden unfit to serve? And did that really get finally driven home, as you were saying, before the break, Charles, yesterday? It's sort of, I guess my question is, was that press conference his Captain Queeg moment? Right? Everybody's seen the K Mutiny. If you haven't, shame on you. Where finally you can't ignore what the crew already knows. Finally, the brass can't ignore what the crew already knows, that the captain of the ship is not seaworthy. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Now Biden tried to head off those critical comments about his failed memory, contained in the report. He tried to head them off in the statement by making it personal, as he often does, by bringing in his son, Bo, who passed away. This is a way, I think, to try to push the press corps. Don't ask me about that. Don't you dare ask me about that, because I'll come over the top with the Bo story on you and you're going to look bad. This is what he tried to do, but there's a problem.
In addition, I know there's some attention paid to some language in the report about my recollection of events. There's even reference that I don't remember when my son died. How in the hell dare he raise that? Frankly, when I was asked the question, I thought to myself, it wasn't any of their damn business. Let me tell you something. Some of you have commented, I wear, since the day he died, every single day, the rosary he got from Our Lady of...
Our Lady of what? It's not compelling when you try to be morally indignant and you highlight the problem documented in the report because you can't remember the rosary is from Our Lady of... We don't know, because he couldn't fill in the blank. He just stopped.
Yeah.
And it only got worse when he was finished with his remarks and they went to the brief Q&A section of the program. How bad is your memory? Asked Steve Ducey.
President Biden, something the special counsel said in
Peter
his
Ducey.
Report is that one of the reasons you were not charged is because, in his description, you are a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory.
I'm well-meaning, and I'm an elderly man, and I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president, and I put this country back on its feet. I don't need his recommendation. It's
How
totally
bad
out.
Is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak. That's
your memory has gotten worse.
Uh-huh. And unless you just chalk this up to Peter Ducey being too pointed, you know, because he's Fox and he's just shilling for Trump or whatever you might say, if you're inclined to that line of thinking. CNN's MJ Lee. CNN, I said.
Mr. President, for months when you were asked about your age, you would respond with the words, watch me.
Watch
Many
me.
American people have been watching, and they have expressed concerns about your age.
That is your judgment. That is your judgment. That is not the judgment of the press.
They express concerns about your mental acuity. They say that you are too old. Mr. President, in December, you told me that you believe there are many other Democrats who could defeat Donald Trump. So why does it have to be you now? What is your answer to that question?
Because I'm the most qualified person in this country to be president of the United States and finish the job I started.
Sound like someone stepping down?
Not voluntarily.
Nope. And then he came back for one more question. That was a fateful decision. Somebody asked him on the way out the door about the state of play in Israel. And, well, I'll let the big guy speak for himself because he ain't going nowhere.
I'm of the view, as you know, that the conduct of the response in the Gaza Strip has been over the top. I think that, as you know, initially, the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in. I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate. I talked to Bibi to open the gate on the Israeli side. I've been pushing really hard, to get humanitarian assistance into Gaza. There are a lot of innocent people who are starving, a lot of innocent people who are in trouble and dying. And it's got to stop, number one. Number two, I was also in a position that I'm the guy that made the case that we have to do much more to increase the amount of material going in.
Yeah, we got to get those burritos and tacos and such into there, man, into Gaza.
Right.
People are starving.
Yeah, Mexico on the border of... So, right. So, of course, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is the president of Egypt, which is the relevant country, not Mexico. And it's one of those things where you misstate something, like I just did when I said Steve Ducey instead of Peter Ducey, you know, he's getting the Ducey's confused. You catch yourself. It's something in that moment where you would say Mexico instead of Egypt when you're talking about the Middle East, you think that might register, but it doesn't. It doesn't. Our Lady of what? Where? Our Lady of which? What? Where? President? Mr. President? Mm-hmm. By the way, the position of the administration that Israel's response is over the top as well. It's a strange position to take when you're simultaneously pushing a comprehensive border bill, foreign aid package that includes another $17 billion for Israel. But I guess this is the fork-tongued foreign policy that you get from somebody who is, well, unfit for office. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. George in Naperville.
Yes, Dan, Biden is aging like fine wine. Let him be.
He's turning into vinegar? Yeah. Thanks for the call, George. Mark on the south side.
Good morning, Dan and Charles. In the HER report, he said he's an elderly man with a memory loss. Biden's defending himself last night saying he doesn't have a memory loss. So when he took the documents, he wasn't elderly and he had no memory loss. They should have gone forward with the charges.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Yeah, it's a good point you make. I mean, the whole, you know, as we were talking about before Mike Scott's newscast, HER's report is not without its problems. We're sort of glossing over the commentary. It has very, very op-ed type form rather than a legal analysis. His commentary to distinguish it from Trump, his commentary on Biden's memory and age and what a jury might think. How about just whether or not he knowingly broke the law and what charges should be recommended if he did knowingly break the law? And right, as you point out, what was his mens rea at the time he made the decisions or was aware of the decisions or should have been aware of the decisions about classified documents? His fitness, if you will, his acuity at that time. Yeah, I mean, those are all good points. But of course, because of some of the responses you just heard, the statements you just heard from the president, the conversation now is completely about, can he continue? Should he continue? Lewis, Southside.
Yes, I think we're missing it. He's playing his get out of jail card. Okay, he has just been certified as not being competent enough to testify. To testify against what? Against the Hunter Biden case. And also, if he loses, Kamala Harris will become the first black woman president. And so he's killing two birds with one stone.
All right. Thanks for the call, Lewis. Dean in Sarasota, Florida.
Hey, Dan, how you doing? Hey, did anybody mention that only 2 hours earlier he ended a news conference in Virginia emphatically by stating this issue is now closed? And 2 hours later, he goes on national TV and opens it up again.
Well, good point.
That's him. And his news conferences, they always start late. My wife and I, we watch, we get ready for KJP coming out at 2:30 or whatever.
Sure,
it is.
It's exciting.
They're
yeah.
Always late. It's a poorly run administration. One of these days, we're going to wake up and the Chinese are just going to say, today's the day. And they're going to press that nuclear button. And who knows? Today may be the day after last night's performance.
Thanks for the call, Dean. Let's hope not. Chris and Kerry.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, I'm so tired of him using his son. And he literally dances on the grave of his son. He brings it up at the most opportune moments. He repeatedly tells the story of his son dying in the war. So, you know, he just uses it as a tool. It's disrespectful and disgusting. And then I'm glad that you played the soundbite of him confusing CC, Mexico, Egypt. It just, now this is like almost a third day in a row. I mean, how can you get around this, and I talk to my friends who are on the left, and I just say, listen, you can admit that the guy's so far gone, he's not competent. It doesn't mean you support Trump, and they can't distinguish between the two. Because to admit that Biden is not effective almost means they support Trump. I just don't get it.
Yeah, thanks for the call. And it also means that they've made a terrible mistake in 2020, and they don't want to bring themselves to address that either. But the problem is, they may not say it to you, your friends, but they're saying it to pollsters. We know this. We know a majority of Democrats think that Biden is too old for the gig, which is a nice way of saying he's unfit to serve. I mean, this is not going unnoticed by people other than those who are willfully blind. So there are many, many Biden voters who are seeing the same thing and may still be Biden supporters. They're seeing the same things we're seeing. How could you not? How could you not?
Yeah, the other mental illness here is the TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome. You just can't cut through it. It's hard to cut through it.
No, but I'll tell you what. I think VDH was on last night on Fox last night doing postmortem, almost literally, on that press conference. And he made a good point about the press. You know, we played that clip from MJ Lee of CNN, you know, getting a little rough with Biden and him, you know, yelling at her, basically. And it's getting to the point now where some people are going to protect their own backsides, including the Democrat Party, the Democrat Socialist Party's comm shop, the D.C. press corps, which includes, you know, the entirety of CNN. Take a listen to VDH.
Well, I think they've jumped the proverbial shark. And I think right now there's a lot of journalists who are saying, I want to get out of Dodge. I want to go on record that I've always said, I always believed he had mental problems or he was not. And I think they're going to try to be the first to say, I have integrity. I'm empirical. I'm disinterested, because it's going to get worse and worse. And they don't want to be the last person on the Biden is competent train. And I think they want to get off. And I expect just the opposite. I think a lot of people are going to say, I knew this the whole time. I just couldn't say so. Because I think we're reaching a point where I don't see how he's going to be tenable when a federal special prosecutor appointed by his own attorney general says that he's essentially unfit to be president of the United States.
Yeah.
What do you do after that?
What do you do after that? That is the operative question. Unfit to stand trial, but I'm more than competent to be leader of the free world. That is a tough sell. Tough sell. Mac in the 219.
This whole thing is a setup. They put this on there. They all knew it was coming. Either Obama and Jill put this together to get him out of there, because there is no chance the Justice Department would ever think of putting that in that document. No chance. This is the way to get him out, and they're going to slip in that greasy-haired scumbag from California, and that's who we're running against. But this was a setup, intentional. Nobody puts that demented diaper-wearing goofball on TV live at 8 o'clock at night on a Thursday night.
Thanks for the call, Mac.
He makes an excellent point. They had to think about this at the Justice Department. This report and those lines in there addressing his mental fitness or his memory, they had to know that would be a time bomb. That would be a bomb, more than a time bomb. That would be a bomb. That would blow up a lot. They had to know that. Thanks, Mac.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where is Biden fluffer Patrick Bateman? Gavin Newsom. I mean, he should be out there publicly filleting Biden right now, saying this is the greatest president that we could ever conceive of. And so I'm just honored and humbled to be out there fluffing for him, making sure that, Rachel Levine stays at attention. So we'll see. We'll see if they trot out their surrogates today to try to aid with the damage control. Randy and Sandwich.
So, Dan, let's play that hypothetical out, and they do trot out a person. Are there any kind of election rules or anything that would have to be followed that all of a sudden you have this person, whoever it is, come in at the 11th hour, and now the American people have to decide between this or that with little or no going through any kind of debates or anything? I mean, is there rules behind that, or is this that's what would happen?
Well, I mean, it depends on the timing. Thanks for the call, Randy, right? I mean, these elections are state-administered matters. So you've got filing deadlines that have passed. Obviously, we've already had some elections, a few. You've got filing deadlines that have passed in many others. I mean, Super Tuesday is March 5th. So how somebody enters the race now and qualifies for enough states and wins enough states to get the number of delegates to replace him as the nominee that way, I don't see it. So he has to hang on if there was going to be a willful stepping down, if he was going to willingly step down, because that's the only way it's going happening. And I still don't see it. I still don't believe it's going to happen, barring a health event. And I'm not talking about last night. I'm talking about an actual health event, not just the continued deterioration. You would have him at some point say, I can't run again for medical reasons, and I don't if that's at the convention, if that's prior to, if that's afterwards, and then the party poobahs would appoint a replacement.
The party poobahs, I think those are the ones that are going to ultimately make the call.
I think it would be
they're going to make a decision.
I think it would be the maybe the way that you get around it, you know, playing this threat out, is if you can, if it came to this. He limps to the convention, and then it's a floor fight for the nomination. So that way you don't have a back room saying, oh, these party poobahs just took out Kamala Harris and put in Governor Patrick Bateman or somebody else, and you have that sort of division. You make it a floor fight, and whoever wins the floor fight at the convention wins it fair and square, and that's who the nominee is. I could see that as a scenario by which they could potentially try and salvage something if he is unable to make it to November. Frank in Arlington Heights, quickly, please.
Hey, good morning. You know, Woodrow Wilson, 1919, had a stroke doing the League of Nations Treaty. So, I mean, there's a precedent where we had a president like this who wasn't really fully mentally capable at the time. And Edith Wilson, his second wife, really kind of ran the White House. The Democrats didn't run him. They ran James Cox and FDR as the vice president. They lost big. Warren Harding actually took Tennessee, one of the southern states. So there's some hope for the Republicans here. But that's just another historical example. Just wanted to share.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Not to mention what we know about Eleanor Roosevelt during the FDR years.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J is Charles Thomas, former ABC 7 political reporter.
Good morning.
Morning, sir. And before we get to the Tucker-Putin sit-down, one other theory that's bouncing around I've seen on Biden after his Captain Queeg performance last night is an article of impeachment. Move impeachment against him right now and put him on trial in the Senate. For what? For not being mentally fit to do the job? Here's Article 2, Section 4, the impeachment clause. The president, vice president, all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office for on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, I'm not saying that Biden isn't eligible for impeachment. I think he is. Biden Incorporated, the border. I don't see mental unfitness listed. Do you?
Isn't this something that perhaps could be considered under the 25th Amendment?
Well, yes, you could make a 25th Amendment argument. Yes, you could. But the problem with that is you're going to have, I assume this is going to happen today or very soon. If I was doing damage control, that I'd be doing. Joe Biden gets a clean bill of health from the White House doctors. Right here, I have this letter from my doctor. He says, you know, hey, like any 80-year-old, he's got some. Sometimes he has. He's a little slow on the recall, but he's, you know, of sound mind and body, and certainly able to fulfill his functions as the, you know, as the United States' chief executive officer.
Yeah,
that's what you're gonna get. You're gonna get that.
Yeah,
you know, you're gonna get that.
Among 340 million people, this is the guy.
Yeah,
the big guy.
But I mean, you're gonna. But so then you have what? So you're gonna have. You're gonna try to compel him to be examined by other doctors. You're gonna have some sort of proceeding under the 25th Amendment to try to out-expert his experts. Nah. I mean, I guess it puts the spotlight on his mental unfitness. But to me, you're already selling past the close. By the way, are you really that interested in removing him from office this way? Or would you rather see him make it to November?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people would rather see him make it to November.
Yeah.
Just the way he is right now.
Right.
No border bill, no, just the status quo.
That's
in November, run on your record, Joe.
Yeah, right. And get out there on the trail and do that CNN town hall and sign up for those debates, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, yeah. So let's think through this a little bit. Let's not, you know, rush to the gallows here. All right, let's move to Tucker and Putin. Just a general assessment for those who were able to consume the 2+ hour interview that was released last night. Did Tucker live down to the expectations of his detractors as offering a fawning interview, just being a platform enabler for Putin to propagate his agitprop? Or was it pretty expansive, pretty substantive? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Here was a moment, for example, that I think it will make it very difficult for those Tucker is a Kremlin stooge, those who argue that, to convince anybody who's not already in the tank. This is Tucker Carlson pushing the Russian dictator on Evan Gershkovich, the Wall Street Journal reporter who is held in custody by Putin. I mean, yeah, you know, he's in prison for blah, blah, blah. He's a hostage. And Tucker Carlson characterizes him as such.
I just got to ask you one last question, and that's about Evan Gershkovich, who's the Wall Street Journal reporter. He's 32, and he's been in prison for almost a year. And I just want to ask you directly if, as a sign of your decency, you would be willing to release him to us and we'll bring him back to the United States.
We have done so many gestures of goodwill out of decency that I think we have run out of them. We have never seen anyone reciprocate to us in a similar manner. However, in theory, we can say that we do not rule out that we can do that if our partners take reciprocal steps.
What makes this difference is the guy's obviously not a spy. He's a kid. And maybe he was breaking your law in some way, but he's not a super spy, and everybody knows that, and he's being held hostage in exchange, which is true. With respect, it's true, and everyone knows it's true. So maybe he's in a different category. Maybe it's not fair to ask for, you know, somebody else in exchange for letting him out. Maybe it degrades Russia to do that.
He was receiving classified confidential information, and he did it covertly.
I mean, this is a 32-year-old, like, newspaper reporter.
He committed something different. He's not just a journalist. I reiterate, he's a journalist who was secretly getting confidential information. I do not rule out that the person you refer to, Mr. Gershkovitz, may return to his motherland. By the end of the day, it does not make any sense to keep him in prison in Russia.
I hope you let him out.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. It would have been fun to follow up and ask why he decided to relent on Brittany Griner and release Brittany Griner back to the United States before her trumped up as it was, prison term was up, while he continues to extend Gershkovich's captivity. But, I mean, is that somebody who's in service of Putin? Asking that question, putting him on the spot like that?
I mean, I thought that I watched the whole thing, and a lot of the information, quite frankly, I'd already heard.
Yeah.
From sources other than directly from Putin, because I do not depend on American mainstream media for my information. I'm searching all over the web. And what the narrative that Putin offered, particularly regarding the war in Ukraine, is a narrative that's heard all around the world. We aren't hearing it here because we have a corrupt media that pretty much does nothing but beltway propaganda, speaking of the major networks and major cable companies, corporate media. But he didn't say anything that was particularly groundbreaking for those of us who read other news sources other than corporate media in the United States, particularly on the origin of the war in Ukraine. It was not an unprovoked invasion, as Putin, he gave us history lessons on how people in that part of Eastern Europe have been going at it for over 1,000 years.
Well, right. The conversation started in the 9th century, and, you know, by the end of the first hour, we were to present day, but it took some time. I mean, it was definitely Putin's version of history, some of it accurate, some of the recent history, like over the last 24 years of his dictatorship, a little less accurate, I would argue. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And Putin's rationale for the invasion is something that we have heard before. We've heard it from him in speeches he gave before and after the invasion. We've also heard it from University of Chicago professor John Mearsheimer. Make this distinction clear, because I know there are children listening who are never Trumpers and have the Ukraine flag on their social media. And so anything that is in any way layered or textured is beyond their capacity to contemplate. Because if you're not just writing blank checks to Zelensky and applauding everything he does and ignoring all of the anti-small-D democratic measures he's taken, and also imprisoning journalists and suspending the press and suspending elections,
and I
could go on.
Closing churches.
Yeah, closing churches. So if you're one of those people that can't hear any of that, then you won't appreciate this. But when John Mearsheimer explains why Putin invaded, for example, the mistakes that the West made, he's giving you an insight into how Russia and Putin thinks about these things. You don't have to agree with their perspective or the actions they take, but it would be judicious to understand their perspective, because if you understand how somebody's thinking, then you can anticipate what they might do in reaction to what you do. That's why. it's important to understand it. That's why it's important to listen to him. You don't think anything at face value. You understand he's posturing, that he's playing his own angles to his own ends. But there are still things that you glean that are useful in understanding how he thinks and how Russians think. There was a moment relatively early in the conversation, for example, where Putin provided some insight into what Russian leadership thought would happen after the Soviet Union collapsed. And this is kind of important. And frankly, from knowing a lot of Russians, you know, they're immigrants here, this is how a lot of them think. And they tell me the same thing. This is how a lot of Russian people think. What the excesses of Putin and the things that he does and they don't agree with. But in terms of what he's saying about where the Russian mindset was post-Soviet Union collapse is not inaccurate. Take a listen.
The former Russian leadership assumed that the Soviet Union had ceased to exist, and therefore there were no longer any ideological dividing lines. Russia even agreed voluntarily and proactively to the collapse of the Soviet Union, and believed that this would be understood by the so-called civilized West as an invitation for cooperation and association. That is what Russia was expecting, both from the United States and the so-called collective West as a whole.
And the key here is, even if that is a stylized version, or that is not a well-founded expectation, or that's not even really an accurate description of what Russian leadership thought, but it's what they wanted after they imploded the Soviet Union, as opposed to this, you know, they sort of, they agreed to let the Soviet, you know, it's a very sanitized version of Russian leadership, but what do you expect from Putin? But that's not the point. The point is to understand what people bought, what the mindset was. So that's what you're dealing with. Whether that mindset is well founded or not, it's what you're dealing with.
And why should we listen to what Vladimir Putin has to say, propaganda or not? He leads a country that has more nuclear warheads than any other country on the planet. We need to know what this guy is thinking, right or wrong. He's
right.
An important player on the world stage. And thank God there are journalists like Tucker Carlson who will sit in front of him and secure the interview with him and hear what he has to say. We need to do that.
Right. I mean, and put questions to him. So at least he's on the record. We have something to point to. Not that you take him at his word or you're completely, you don't have to be completely convinced that this is his actual position. But this is what he said about the revanchist arguments that are made by proponents of Ukraine to say, well, if we let Ukraine fall, then the dominoes start. Then he's into the Baltics, he's into Poland, he's into Hungary, and this is that exchange.
Because we have no interest in Poland, Latvia, or anywhere else. Why would we do that? We simply don't have any interest. It's just threat mongering.
Well, the argument, I know you know this, is that, well, he invaded Ukraine, he has territorial aims across the continent, and you're saying unequivocally you don't.
It is absolutely out of the question. You just don't have to be any kind of analyst. It goes against common sense to get involved in some kind of a global war.
Joanna in Central Illinois, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I just wanted to say how eye-opening Tucker's interview with Putin was last night. Like you said, Putin gave a stylized condition of history or whatever, but at least he was able to speak coherently, clearly. No, and our leader Biden, he can't for 5 minutes.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Joanna, appreciate it. Something else too, just one more bite. We'll get to more of this a bit later in the show, but once you got off Ukraine and onto other topics, the Gershkovich hostage situation. I'm glad Tucker asked it. I said yesterday on the show, I hope he does, and he did. How about this? You know, there's been a lot of discussion, certainly online, about the move of the BRICS to establish a new reserve currency. They don't like the dollar as the world's reserve currency, and if the dollar stopped being the world's reserve currency, that would be bad news for America. I don't think that the threat is as imminent as some do, but there's definitely discontent out there among these nations, Russia being one of them. So Tucker asked Putin about it.
The U.S. dollar, which has kind of united the world in a lot of ways, maybe not to your advantage, but certainly to ours, is that going away as the reserve currency, the universally accepted currency? How have sanctions, do you think, changed the dollar's place in the world?
You know, to use the dollar as a tool of foreign policy struggle is one of the biggest strategic mistakes made by the U.S. political leadership. The dollar is the cornerstone of the United States power, but they won't stop printing. What does the debt of $33 trillion tell us about? As soon as the political leadership decided to use the U.S. dollar as a tool of political struggle, a blow was dealt to this American power. I would not like to use any strong language, but it is a stupid thing to do and a grave mistake. Look at what is going on in the world. Even the United States allies are now downsizing their dollar reserves. Seeing this, everyone starts looking for ways to protect themselves. But the fact that the United States applies restrictive measures to certain countries, such as placing restrictions on transactions, freezing assets, etc., causes grave concern and sends a signal to the whole world. Do you even realize what is going on or not? Does anyone in the United States realize this? What are you doing? You are cutting yourself off. All experts say this. Ask any intelligent and thinking person in the United States what the dollar means for the U.S. You're killing it with your own hands.
Well, we are killing it with our own hands, but not in the way he thinks, not by applying sanctions to dictatorial regimes that are enemies of America, like his, like Iran, like China. That's not how we're killing it. We're killing it by devaluing it.
Well, he's saying that's how you are devaluing it.
No, we're devaluing it through the mystics at the Fed with their printing press and their asset bought purchases, the quantitative easing over the last decade and their other manipulations and profligate fiscal policy that puts $34 trillion of debt on the backs of Americans and another $120 trillion in unfunded liabilities. That's how we're devaluing it.
A question I wanted Tucker to ask that he did not ask: what would the Russian reaction be if we confiscated $300 billion in Russian money that is invested in this country and turned it over to Ukraine to continue buying weapons in what I believe is the largest money laundering scheme in the history of the world, which is sending money to Ukraine so that they can buy weapons from American weapons manufacturers. So the money basically is staying here. But at any rate, I mean, what would he do? What would the reaction be?
I wanted him to ask after the Gershkovich question if he could also take the member of Pussy Riot that's in prison by Biden. That's in prison by Putin back home with him as well. I don't want to forget about Pussy Riot.
Pussy Riot.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay in Yorkville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah. I just want to remind our listeners that what Tucker Carlson did with Putin is what Donald Trump masterfully did with many world leaders, with Xi, with Kim Jong-un, with Putin, with even the leader of the Taliban. He met with these people one-on-one, and he got into their head, understood their perspective, and was able to deal with them. And we don't get that with the current president.
Thanks for the call, Jay. Dan and Charles Thomas in for Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning, Clarence Thomas. I got the Supreme Court oral argument. Charles Thomas, that is, former ABC 7 political reporter, not a Supreme Court justice, not yet, at least.
Not yet. I got to go to law school. And
you don't have to go to law school, actually.
Get my first.
The one court you do not need to be a lawyer.
You really?
You do not need to be a lawyer to be a Supreme Court justice.
Man, I did not know that. I didn't even tell you. Here I am. I never knew that.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a lawyer to be on the Supreme Court.
If Trump wins a second term, I'm going to put Charles Thomas up on the short list.
Nominate me for the court.
Yeah. All right.
I do pretty well.
I think you do fine than some of the other members of the court, I'll tell you that. Clarence Thomas, the other Thomas, he was on during a questioning yesterday, during oral arguments. It was pretty good. It was sort of a 1-2 punch, Clarence Thomas and John Roberts, on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, that is the basis for the claim of insurrection and the effort to bounce Trump from the ballot. And Jason Murray, the attorney representing the state of Colorado, I mean, he did a pretty good job. He's doing about the best job from the portions of the oral arguments I heard. He did about the best job you can do with a dog of a case that he's got. Mm-hmm. So listen to this exchange on that pertinent section.
States have created under their Article 1 and Article 2 powers to run elections.
But it would seem that particularly after Reconstruction and after the Compromise of 1877 and during the period of Redeemers, that you would have that kind of conflict. There were a plethora of Confederates still around. There were any number of people who would continue to either run for state offices or national offices. So it would seem that would suggest that there would at least be a few examples of national candidates being disqualified, if your reading is correct.
Well, there were certainly national candidates who were disqualified by Congress refusing to seat them.
I understand that, but that's not this case. Did states disqualify them? That's what we're talking about here. I understand Congress would not seat them.
Other than the example I gave, no. But again, Your Honor, that's not surprising because there wouldn't have been – states certainly wouldn't have the authority to remove a sitting
federal officer. What was the purpose of Section 3? States were sending people. The concern was that the former Confederate states would continue being bad actors. And the effort was to prevent them from doing this. And you're saying that, well, this also authorized states to disqualify candidates. So what I'm asking you for, if you are right, what are the examples?
Well, Your Honor, the examples are states excluded many candidates for state office, individuals holding state offices. We have a number of published cases of states.
I understand that. I understand the states controlling state elections and state positions. What we are talking about here are national candidates. I understand. You look at Foner or Foote, Shelby Foote or McPherson, they all talk about, of course, the conflict after the Civil War. And there were people who felt very strongly about retaliating against the South, the radical Republicans. But they did not think about authorizing the South to disqualify national candidates. And that's the argument you're making. And what I would like to know do you have any examples of this?
Many of those historians have filed briefs in our support in this case, making the point that the idea of the 14th Amendment was that both states and the federal government would ensure rights, and that if states failed to do so, the federal government certainly would also step in. But I think the reason why there aren't examples of states doing this is an idiosyncratic one of the fact that elections worked differently back then. States have a background power under Article 2 and the 10th Amendment to run presidential elections. They didn't use that power to police ballot access until about the 1890s. And by the 1890s, everyone had received amnesty and these issues had become moot. So I don't think
Counsel,
the history
I like to
tells us.
So look at Justice Thomas's question sort of from the 30,000
foot level. I mean, the whole point of the 14th Amendment was to restrict state power, right? States shall not abridge privileges, immunity. They won't deprive people of property without due process. They won't deny equal protection. And on the other hand, it augmented federal power under Section 5. Congress has the power to enforce it. So wouldn't that be the last place that you'd look for authorization for the states, including Confederate states, to enforce, implicitly authorized, to enforce the presidential election process? That seems to be a position that is at war with the whole thrust of the 14th Amendment and very ahistorical.
It is. It's both of those things. It's at war with the whole basis and spirit of the 14th Amendment, and it's ahistorical. Nicely summarized, Roberts, and nicely done, Justice Thomas, keeping Murray from getting off of the particulars of this case and trying to sort of reverse engineer the issue the way that he attempted to do. This is so straightforward. Even Elena Kagan is making sense.
No, there has to be some process for determining those questions. And then the question becomes, does anything in the 14th Amendment say that only Congress can create that process? And Section 5 very clearly is not an exclusive provision. It says Congress shall have power.
But maybe most boldly, I think that the question that you have to confront is why a single state should decide who gets to be president of the United States. In other words, you know, this question of whether a former president is disqualified for insurrection to be president.
Yeah, why a single state should decide that she's it's certainly in the right neighborhood. And then just going back to something we talked about when this case was first taken up and the decision came down by the Colorado State Supreme Court, the precedent this sets, what this would unleash if you were to legitimize this usurpation by the Colorado Supreme Court, Justice Roberts.
But what do you do with the what I would seem to me to be plain consequences of your position? If Colorado's position is upheld, surely there will be disqualification proceedings on the other side, and some of those will succeed. Some of them will have different standards of proof. Some of them will have different rules about evidence. Maybe the Senate report won't be accepted in others because it's hearsay. Maybe it's beyond a reasonable doubt, whatever. In very quick order, I would expect, although my predictions have never been correct, I would expect that a goodly number of states will say, whoever the Democratic candidate is, you're off the ballot, and others for the Republican candidate, you're off the ballot. And it'll come down to just a handful of states that are going to decide the presidential election. That's a pretty daunting consequence.
Well, certainly, Your Honor, the fact that there are potential frivolous applications of a constitutional provision isn't a reason.
Well, no, hold on. I mean, you might think they're frivolous, but probably the people who are bringing them may not think they're frivolous. Insurrection is a broad term. And if there's some debate about it, I suppose that will go into the decision. And then eventually what we would be deciding, whether it was an insurrection when one president did something as opposed to when somebody else did something else. And what do we do? Do we wait until near the time of counting the ballots and sort of go through which states are valid and which states aren't?
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Professor William Jacobson, clinical professor of law, director of the Securities Law Clinic at Cornell Law School. He's also the founder of LegalInsurrection.com, president of the Legal Insurrection Foundation. Professor Jacobson, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
I mean, it seems like maybe with the exception of Sotomayor, and maybe under pressure, if it is good looking the way of an 8-0 decision against the Colorado Supreme Court's position, that she'll fold in. It looks like this is, I mean, it sounds pretty straightforward from the questioning, doesn't it?
Well, it sure does. I mean, we're always hesitant to jump to conclusions based on oral argument. But given this is such a weighty question, everybody saw it coming for weeks now, and nobody took the side of the people who won off Trump off the ballot. I mean, I think clearly people are predicting 8190. I think if it's 8-1, I think you're right. It probably would be 9-0. They may all have their different reasons, and there's, you know, three or four or five or six reasons why this should be reversed that came out in oral argument, and they may not all agree on all of them, but I think we're going to probably get 9-0 here, because it's, I think Justice Roberts, you know, hit it right on the head. It's going to be a free-for-all in
right.
this country if they allow Colorado to get away with this.
Right. And yeah, that to me is that the practical consequence. I mean, we can get through, go through some of the issues that are more dense, the self-executing argument with respect to 14-3. But just the practical implications that Roberts articulated and have been articulated in the run up to oral arguments here in the public domain. That is not a tenable situation. And the court definitely doesn't want to be even contemplate the prospect of being put into the position that Justice Roberts described.
That's right. And that's what he sees coming, that he sees that what the, you know, Colorado supporters really want here is they want to toss this all to the Supreme Court eventually. And he pointed out how impractical that is. And this is a court that's been under attack a lot. It doesn't want to be in that position, and it's not required to be in that position. And so I don't think they are voluntarily going to take on the role of deciding which states get counted and which don't.
Well, so the good news is that I think they conference today after all arguments, right? So this, we should hear something from them relatively soon, and we can put this issue to bed and tackle the myriad other issues before us between now and November, yes?
Well, I would think they'd come out with something quickly. I mean, they just have to. I mean, we're
yep.
in the election season. You know, that doesn't mean necessarily Monday. But they're not going to wait till June on this. They can't wait till June on this. My guess is within a couple of weeks we'll have their decision. They're all probably have their opinions written already, and they're just waiting. You know, we could get 6 or 7 or 8 opinions here, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to probably be 9-0 that Colorado is reversed.
I wanted to get to another matter with you, too, after last night's press conference from President Biden. And the aftermath of that now being the renewed question about his competency to continue to serve, some discussion of impeachment on this basis. I don't really see that. Some discussion of a 25th Amendment invocation because of his performance and what's contained in that special prosecutor's report, Robert Herr's report about his memory and by extension competency to stand trial. But I mean, that seems relatively implausible, too, when you need the VP and a majority of the executive departments or a majority of Congress to move on the president. I don't think one press conference or one special prosecutor's report gets it done. But I mean, you know, in the aftermath of that, from a legal perspective, what would you be thinking?
Well, I'm not sure there's a legal remedy here for anybody. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the notion that the 25th Amendment is going to be invoked successfully here, I think, is very slim, you know, unless they're seeing something the others aren't. Now, Kamala Harris, I think she'd go along with it if she thought she had the vote, but I don't know that they'll be there. Remember, these are all people appointed by Biden. So I think it's going to have to get a lot worse for him. But it's obviously a huge blow to his campaign. It's huge fodder for, you know, a presumptively Trump campaign. You know, is it going to matter 6 months from now? I don't know. But it's certainly not the sort of development you want. But I don't see a legal angle here. I think this is a political angle.
Mm-hmm. The special prosecutor's report, was it appropriate for him, since this is supposed to be a legal document that contains a legal analysis, to be talking about how a jury may view a defendant Biden and other such considerations that have very little to do with whether or not he violated the law in terms of handling of classified documents at the time that they were mishandled?
Well, I think, you know, technically speaking, it shouldn't make a difference in terms of whether someone was guilty of the crime at the time it was committed. But, you know, this is what James Comey did with Hillary Clinton. If you remember, I think it was July 5th
yes.
of 2016, he spent 17 minutes going through why she lied about her server, why she lied about documents, And everybody's like, now he's going to lower the boom. And then he says, but no reasonable prosecutor would bring this.
Right.
Right. And he's like, what?
No, but I know, but that's my point. I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now.
I know, but, you know, technically speaking, I don't think it's appropriate. I think the question is, can you prove your case beyond a reasonable doubt? I don't think a prosecutor should bring a case that he can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt, as opposed to essentially jury nullification. They're going to think he's a crazy old man with a bad memory and therefore won't convict him. So, no, I don't think it's appropriate, but it's been done before. And it's been done, you know, but this is politically, you know, damaging. It would have been more damaging if the recommendation was an indictment. So I think Biden was let off the hook, but it's just really frightening that we have somebody who's deemed mentally incompetent to convict, but can still, you know, have his finger on the nuclear
pump. Right, yeah. Yeah, he's not fit to stand trial, but he's certainly fit to be the commander in chief. Try to make sense of this dynamic. It's a difficult one. But the other thing you point out, though, too, is it's been done before, the power of precedent. And this is why setting bad precedents is so dangerous and should be more considered than it is in our politics.
Yeah, well, look what they've done to Trump, though. The prosecutors have not exercised that discretion. They've done the other way, which is we're going to put him on trial and try to convict him, regardless of what a jury might do. They're going to try. And whereas Biden gets the benefit of the doubt, which is, well, maybe there are grounds there to convict him, but we don't think a jury would do it. So definitely that's where the double standard lies, is they've gone out of their way to find a reason to charge and indict Trump. They've gone out of their way to find a reason not to charge and indict Joe Biden, where the conduct is mostly similar, not identical. There's no allegation, if I recall, of obstruction of justice like there is in the Trump case in Florida. But nonetheless, the deliberate and knowing retention of classified information in Biden's case, vice presidency, and in Trump's case, post-presidency, is really, for the most part, the same.
Yeah.
They both thought they were entitled to hold this stuff, and the government says, no, you're not.
And they'll be the most surprised if that precedent they've just set, that double standard you're describing, boomerangs on them, Biden being probably first in line to be hit by that boomerang. We'll see. Professor William Jacobson, clinical professor of law and director of the Securities Law Clinic at Cornell Law School, founder of LegalInsurrection.com and president of the Legal Insurrection Foundation. Professor Jacobson, thank you as always. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Charles Thomas, former ABC 7 political reporter. And Charles, before we get back to Tucker's interview of Putin, I missed it earlier this morning. I just heard on Mike Scott's newscast, fire at the Palace Grill.
Oh, man, I was thinking about the same thing. That's the place just across the street from the
Johnny's Ice
911 Center or whatever.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And man, many, many breakfasts in that place for me.
Totally. Me too. George Lamparis and his family are really good people. And that really is a Chicago institution, the Palace Grill on Madison. And so condolences go out to George and his family, and I hope they can get it back up and running soon. By the way, you're going to have to get, I mean, you know, they've got all the local celebrities on the wall, like Charles Thomas, former HC7 political reporter. Okay. You're going to have to get him a new 8x10 glossy.
Yeah, how did it get so far along to do that kind of damage?
I don't know.
You've got all these emergency, excuse the expression, emergency nerds across the street who I would think would call for the fire department at a moment's,
maybe
seconds notice.
Yeah, but I mean, it would perhaps happen after hours and nobody noticed it until it was, you know, too far along.
And that place has no windows. I mean, that 911 center.
Yeah.
I mean, very few windows, at least. You can't look across the street and see what's going on. But,
well,
man, that's a tragic.
Yeah, that's no good, no good. Hopefully, well, so hopefully they can get it back up and going. By the way, George in Palace Grill, that was one of those restaurants that was accosted by Lightfoot's COVID Stasi during the pandemic, you know, citations and this and that, like so many other restaurants trying to make a go of it during the shutdown phase of our existence in Chicagoland. Anyway, all right, so well wishes to the Lamparis family and Palace Grill, and I'm sure all of its regular patrons feel the same way.
Yeah, a lot of restaurants, though, are having trouble reopening if something like that would happen because so much, the equation that for restaurants has changed so much over these past few years.
Not to mention dealing with an insurance company.
Oh.
That's never an enjoyable experience. I certainly have not had an enjoyable experience dealing with it my home after the hurricane. But anyway, I digress. Not about me. It's about Palace Grill. And so well wishes for them. All right, let's get back to Tucker's interview with Putin. Turns out that Tucker is not going to do a reverse Mikhail Brishnikov and White Knights and defect to Russia. I think he's going to come back and remain an American. That's the good news, despite what you may have heard about Tucker Carlson being a Kremlin stooge. The other thing, too, I mean, we didn't even mention this yesterday, but the comedy of that one member of the EU parliament from Van Damme Land in Belgium talking about travel sanctions on Tucker Carlson for interviewing Putin. He banned into the EU, Tucker Carlson. I mean, just out of their minds. And
totally out of their minds.
And what we learn from the two-hour conversation he had with Putin is a lot of what we already knew, and some updating what we know, like when Tucker pressed him to release Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gerskovich, which was a good moment. I'm glad he did, which Tucker point blank came in on whether he has his sights set on more of Eastern Europe if he were able to roll through Ukraine. And again, you're not taking the answers at face value, but all you can do is ask the questions and press the man and see if there's something that he says, the way he says it, the context he provides, that provides some insight to understand more about this dictator who lords over one of America's enemies. It's to increase our understanding so we make better decisions. And this is something that so many in this country who just have a knee-jerk antipathy toward Tucker Carlson or anything on the right don't seem to appreciate.
Anybody seen Boris Johnson, you know, the former PM from Great Britain, who apparently torpedoed a peace deal just about 2 years ago that would have stopped this war before it really started? Putin makes that claim, of course, during the interview, that there was a deal, a negotiated settlement, and that Boris Johnson flies into Kyiv and torpedoes it on behalf of the Biden administration, which led to a war that would eventually cost over 500,000 lives.
Here is that exchange that Charles is referring to.
But do you think at this point, as of February 2024, he has the latitude, the freedom, to speak with you or your government directly about putting an end to this, which clearly isn't helping his country?
Zelensky
or
he's
the
talking
world.
About.
Can he do that, do you think?
Why not? He considers himself head of state. He won the elections. Although we believe in Russia that the coup d'etat is the primary source of power for everything that happened after 2014. And in this sense, even today, government is flawed. But he considers himself the president, and he is recognized by the United States, all of Europe, and practically the rest of the world in such a capacity. Why not? He can. We negotiated with Ukraine in Istanbul. We agreed. He was aware of this. He even put his preliminary signature on the document I am telling you about. But then he publicly stated to the whole world, we were ready to sign this document, but Mr. Johnson, then the Prime Minister of Great Britain, came and dissuaded us from doing this, saying it was better to fight Russia. and we agreed with this proposal. And the fact that they obeyed the demand or persuasion of Mr. Johnson, the former Prime Minister of Great Britain, seems ridiculous and very sad to me.
See, this is that was not Nord Stream pipeline blowing up. That was just a sound effect with that Tucker clip. But anyway, you know, this is sort of a consistent theme of Putin's, which is that he is a good faith actor, and it's the West's meddling and it's the West's failure to keep its promises that are that is the reason there is instability that precipitated this invasion. Now, I'm not subscribing to that argument, but that's his argument. That's what he's selling. That's what he's selling to the Russian people. That's what he's selling to anybody who's who's buying anything that is anti-West. And so just again, so you understand and can respond on point, which is the point of discourse.
He has signed, well, initialed documents, apparently, that he's showing the rest of the world that, hey, we had this settled, we thought, until the British Prime Minister, at the behest of the crowd in Washington, derailed it, torpedoed it. And now, so we went to war. I mean, he says he's got the proof.
Well, but this is a guy who also is, he personally wasn't, but his country is a signatory to the Budapest Memorandum in the early 90s between Russia, Ukraine, and the United States, which was Ukraine gives up its nuclear arsenal. The U.S. provides some protection. Russia and all three countries agree to respect the territorial boundaries of the three nations at that time. So Putin clearly is not abiding the Budapest Memorandum, even as he's talking about whatever deal, even as he's talking about violations from his perspective of the Minsk Agreement, which I think is very open to debate. Putin gave chapter and verse on that. As you would expect, one-sided interpretation, very, very Russian-friendly interpretation of that document as it relates to the action that President Putin took. Dictator Putin and his whole sort of the first trigger was this coup attempt that deposed Yanukovych, and that's when we took Crimea, and then the 2022 invasion is sort of an extension of all of the broken promises, the trail of broken promises that relate back to what he describes as an illegitimate coup. And then he also talks about sort of what you've heard before from Putin. The NATO expansion that was violative of what Bill Clinton told him back before he left office, and the relationship between Eastern Ukraine and the Russian people in the Donbass region. So, I mean, there's a lot there. Of course, there is over 2 hours, but it was a productive conversation. Generally, I think there's value to be extracted from it and legitimate debate to have over what Putin said. But the idea that Tucker was going to give some fawning interview and he was in the tank for Putin, or he's trying to buddy up to him, is preposterous. And I think Tucker afforded himself quite well. Chadwick Moore joins us now. He's a New York Times bestselling author of Tucker, the biography on Tucker Carlson. He's a contributing editor at Spectator World as well. Chadwick, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you.
So, just give us perspective. I mean, since you know Tucker, pretty well, for anyone, maybe as well as anybody outside of his family, did the biography on him that I just mentioned. The preview he gave, which I thought was quite good, and then his performance against the backdrop of all the people that want him imprisoned for the crime of interviewing a head of state.
Right. So if you recall, he on his show in 2022, I believe it was, on Fox News, he said that they were working on an interview with a world leader, and he learned from a whistleblower in the government that he was being spied on. His private text messages and emails are being read. He never disclosed what that interview was. a lot of us knew it was Putin, and he confirmed that the other day, and that he suggested the government was spying on him once again, that he was ramping up to go to Moscow to interview Putin. The reaction was hilarious, even more hilarious now in hindsight, to this interview. As you said, people saying he was a traitor, that he shouldn't be allowed back in the United States. And then you watch the interview. I doubt we're going to hear many people in mainstream media reporting on the interview because, you know, he was way tougher on Putin than anyone has ever been on Zelensky, that's for sure. And it wasn't in any way fawning. In fact, it was clear that Putin was very annoyed with him many times, especially during Putin's 30-minute history lesson on Russia from the year 800 onward.
Yeah. I was hoping we could start a little further along than the 9th century, but
Yeah, it was interesting, though. Also, you know, he certainly pushed back on him. I think it was really interesting to get this take from Putin on how he views the United States and its position in the world from the Eastern perspective. We don't have any idea how the East views us. We're not really we don't get those opinions. We get American news, obviously. We get European news. But to hear him so frankly speak of why he believes the United States is losing stature in the world, and how he very directly put it that you are not the world's largest economy anymore. It's China. You don't hear that in your own country, but it's true. And he also said one of the reasons why he didn't blame what we hear in this country from our, especially from Republicans or from conservative talking heads, that the fall of this country is due to wokeism and DEI and this and that. He simply said it's your the aggressive stance you take, and you refuse to embrace the shifting changes in geopolitics and the global economy. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it was very interesting to hear that perspective for one.
I agree with you, and also just the other pieces of this too. You know, him saying that. He has, you know, he believes, or he has proof, but he can't disclose it because nobody in the West believes him, that it was America, the CIA, who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. We still don't really have an answer to that question. But you know, you've got Putin making these assertions now. And so that's fodder for more discussion, more reflection on what we're doing in this country vis-a-vis Russia, as well as more reflection on what we should be doing vis-a-vis Putin, right?
It is. And Tucker was one of the, you know, very loudly on his cable news show was the first to say, as far as I'm aware, that it was the U.S. that blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. I mean, that seems obvious to most people. It was a little strange that Putin wouldn't provide evidence, but he did that a lot during the interview, and I think maybe that's maybe just who he is, or maybe it's kind of a Russian thing. For him to sort of be a little sneaky, drop hints, and pull back a bit, say, I'm not going to come any further. But I wonder why Putin wouldn't provide irrefutable evidence that of who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, because he must know it with his massive surveillance and intelligence operations. And he, in that interview, said, well, why would I even bother? You're not going to report on it anyway.
Yeah, right. Right.
That way. So that was sort of interesting.
Yeah, well, it undermines us. Well, I mean, he's got this whole act he does, and we've seen this before in interviews where he's like, hail fellow well met. He's, you know, he's a proponent of peace. He's trying to forge just a nice little middle class lifestyle for this little hamlet he controls in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. This is what we're supposed to believe about him. But of course, it's belied by what we know he does. And so it's just interesting to see the persona that he takes on when he's presenting himself to the West. He obviously knows who his audience is, and this is what he thinks is his best face on behalf of the motherland, right?
Right, and his strong focus on neo-Nazism in Ukraine. Okay, we all know there are like neo-Nazis. Gangs in Ukraine or groups.
Yeah,
or
right. Yeah.
But the fact he pushed that so hard, you just knew he was trying to play to the Western audience because he sees all that shit. You know, everyone in America calling each other neo-Nazis, or at least one side calling another. That wasn't really passing the sniff test so hard for me. I don't know. I'm not an expert on Ukraine, but
Right. That the rationale, he's very concerned about Ukraine because of the presence of, you know, these Nazi agitators. And so it sounded like a speech Merrick Garland could give when he was talking about the denazification of Ukraine. I completely agree. That's a great point. Chadwick Moore, New York Times bestselling author of Tucker, the biography on Tucker Carlson, contributor at Spectator World as well. Chadwick, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And he joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Weekday afternoons at 3 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Charles Thomas, former ABC7 political reporter, radio talk show host. Charles, it seems like we have to be reminded a lot that we have this choice. We cannot go down both paths at the same time.
Regarding
race in America.
Oh, yeah.
We cannot both serve Dr. Kaylee Hobson and Pastor Corey Brooks. You have to make a choice. Is it going to be the road that Dr. Kaylee Hobson wants to take us down, or the road that, and walk with her, or the road that Pastor Corey Brooks does?
Refresh me on Dr. Kaylee Hobson.
I'm going to. Dr. Kaylee Hobson is a pediatrician in Atlanta. She's got a big social media following because she says things like this.
Hey, white men, due to systemic and structural racism that black women have had to endure, they only make 64 cents to every dollar that you make. So as a fitting start to Black History Month, I want to take what you will make today, multiply it by 64%, and then take that difference and give it to some black women today. This shows that you are honoring them, that you are appreciating them, and that you are dedicated to equity. And black women, you know what to do.
You know, I actually saw that clip on Instagram or YouTube or something
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't file her name away. But she, to me, and represents this notion of black history being a chronicle of victimhood. And that's where a lot of people are. They want to cite all of these instances of victimhood down through the years on up until now and disregard or ignore the fact that black history, or the history of black people in this hemisphere certainly, and for that matter, going back to Africa, is a history of struggle, but of victory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my goodness, think about how far we've come, and if we could tell that story, we'd be much better off. And I don't hear enough of that. I hear the negativism focused. I hear Joe Biden say that, you know, your big problem is white supremacy. Or, I hear people talk about the losses. They talk about all the horrible things that have happened over the hundreds of years in this hemisphere, certainly. But we don't talk about how our families have triumphed through it all.
Well, it's an odd thing, isn't it? It's defining Dr. Kaylee Hobson. It's defining black people in the negative.
Yeah.
We're not white. We didn't commit these abuses. We were the victims of these abuses. The thing that you need to know about me is I'm not a white man. Is that the thing I need to know about you? Is that the most important thing? Because, as you say, because I have to define myself in the negative in order to extract concessions from the oppressor.
The biggest promoters of white supremacy are people like that.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, well, you're white and you're better than me. I mean, you're white. You know, wow, look at the privilege you have. I mean, come on.
Well, the The flip side of that, so that's one path, the path we're largely on and have been on for the last 50 years. Another path is being charted by people like you and people like our next guest and people like Corey Brooks, Pastor Corey Brooks, Project Hood on the south side of Chicago. He's in process of building this $35 million community center. He raised the money privately. Had the occasion to interview him on my Counterculture podcast, which you can get at amgreatness.com and all the podcast platforms. And here's what Corey Brooks is doing.
The truth of the matter is, in America right now, and specifically in the city of Chicago, our children are being taught to hate America, to hate American values, and to believe that somehow America is so systemically racist that there is no possible way that young black kids can have a fair chance. And we teach the very opposite.
Yeah, Corey Brooks is focused on teaching black kids, training up black kids, opening the doors of opportunity to black kids, and setting them on their path. And he wants to replicate what he's doing on the South Side in other cities, which is, frankly, the Bob Woodson model to a large extent. And certainly at the grassroots level, that's where Bob Woodson likes it. Bob Woodson is the founder and president of the Woodson Center, founder of 1776 Unites, author of Red, White, and Black, Rescuing American History from Revisionists and Race Hustlers. And he's got a new op-ed in the Wall Street Journal we'll discuss as well. Bob, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure to be here with you, Darren.
So Dr. Kaylee Hobson or Corey Brooks and Charles Thomas and Bob Woodson, that's the choice, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, when I heard her statement, it really is white supremacy, a black version of white supremacy. She posits that the solution to black problems is in the hands of white people. That's white supremacy.
It denies any
agency on the part of blacks. And in our studies, we document the fact that black America's it was able to build hospitals, railroads, everything. We did it. When whites were at their worst, we were at our best then. And that's what we need to be teaching our children.
I mean, you write in this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal out today, I was just referencing. I was born in segregated Philly in 1937. When I was growing up, amid ruthless discrimination, the young and the elderly could still walk the streets safely without fear of being attacked. We were denied civil rights that we later fought for, or that we later fought to be rightfully given to us, but we also enjoyed a relative standard of safety. I mean, the whole point of this piece is that majority neighborhoods and cities were peaceful once upon a time, and they can be again. So how do we get back to where we were, but obviously without the state-sponsored discrimination?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that deprived is not synonymous with being depraved. That you were poor, it doesn't mean that you lack values. And I said when I grew up, all of the stores in my neighborhood were black owned. No one had grates at their windows. No, I never heard of a robbery in my neighborhood. None of that. And so it is important that children are inspired to change when you give them victories that are possible, not always reminding them of injuries to be avoided. And we give endless examples but it's amazing how the mayor of Boston, in the name of equity, on Martin Luther King's birthday, hosted all black appointees and excluded whites. 4 weeks later, she dumps 102 migrants in a facility in the low-income Roxbury section, because she has bought the silence of these black leaders with hosting a dinner. But she didn't put them in the neighborhoods where those Harvard professors live.
You're a Christian gentleman. How do you navigate this issue? Because, of course, a lot of what has been invoked by people like Mayor Eric Adams of New York City is essentially the sanctuary city, sanctuary state posture, the being a welcoming city, community, neighborhood. That's being a good Christian. So what's your response to those sort of using biblical verse to defend sanctuary city, to defend policies that essentially prioritize people in this country illegally over the indigenous American population?
It is precisely the values of a faith, family, and country that enabled blacks to survive. And Mayor Adams is exploiting both the civil rights legacy and also the, our faith legacy as well to justify these horrendous kind of issue problems. I mean, the people who are being injured most are the black community. The blacks in these communities are denied services that are going to illegal immigrants. The people in Roxbury have been asking for over a decade to have that community center renovated, and they refused to, but they did to accommodate hundreds of migrants. And so the neighborhood people never were consulted. But all the mayor had to do was entertain some black officials in the name of equity in City Hall, and she bought their silence with that. But the real the people who are injured are low-income blacks.
So the solution certainly is not going to come from the elected leadership of these cities. We've seen that playing out over the last 50, 60 years. What is the solution? I mean, you write in your piece, again, going back to the Wall Street Journal, about stories about people like Willie Barney in Omaha, Nebraska. I just mentioned Pastor Corey Brooks on the south side of Chicago, who I know you know. I mean, these are the solutionists. These are the Bob Woodson acolytes, the Corey Brookses and the Willie Barneys. This is what we need to replicate and scale.
We really do. But conservatives are not off the hook either, because a lot of them are race grievance merchants too. They profit off of condemning what the left is doing by offering courses on the Constitution. Mm-hmm. That does not represent a ground game. We need to invest. You write checks to all of these candidates who are running for office by the billions of dollars. You're willing to write checks. Why not write checks to the Corey Brooks, to the Piney Woods School that's going to be profiled in an hour and a half documentary at the end of this month? There are institutions and individuals like Corey and others. Their actions embody the principles of the Constitution. And so if we and people are motivated to change then, not by just giving them courses on the Constitution, but when they see that these values have the consequence of improving the lives of inner-city young people, that's when we can bring about a coalition between what I call the Pharaohs and Josephs of this country. Wealthy people who are faith-centered, who really care about the future of this nation, they need to invest and join in partnership with the Corey Brooks of this world. But you must invest. The money is there. We're going to spend $100 billion on a political campaign, a fraction of that if it were invested into Corey Brooks and others. We could change this nation.
Bob, this is Charles Thomas.
Yes.
What do you say? What is your message to the black Christian community? Because Corey Brooks, quite frankly, is an exception here. I mean, we have black churches who say nothing about how the culture, how black people have endorsed the general culture in the United States right now, and without regard for its impact, particularly on our children.
Well, first of all, you can't generalize about the black church, because the Woodson Center has about 3,500 grassroots leaders in 39 states. I would say 80% of my black constituents are young pastors in these communities, and they are they have active ministries, and they really represent the voice of black America. Like 82% of blacks polled are against defund the police. 60% of them don't believe that racial animus is the biggest barrier to flourishing. So a lot of these mainline preachers and these prosperity preachers, they don't represent the black community. And so we must go beyond them and go, and there are thousands of Corey Brooks all over this country, but the qualities that make them effective makes them invisible. You have to be like a Geiger counter and find them. They're not looking for you. And so we at the Woodson Center are trying to say to the great pharaohs of this country, invest in the Cory Brooks. And Woodson Center is going to bring the Cory Brooks together with 100 other people like him so that we can give a voice to the people in the communities who are really representative of low-income people.
The qualities that make them effective make them invisible. That's so interesting. That's such a great insight. That's really interesting because they're not the Father Flaggers, you know, waving placards around about banning guns and standing with the local cardinal and this and that. They're not the media mongers and the glory hounds and the mascots of the Democrat Party. So they're just doing the work to lift up people in their neighborhoods like Corey is doing or Willie Barney is doing in Omaha. And so they're invisible because they're not interesting. They're not provocateurs. They're solutionists.
But let me say this, too, and we must be honest, but conservatives, what bothered me about a lot of my conservative colleagues is they are too willing to sacrifice old friends to appease old enemies.
Uh-huh.
When they have an opportunity to reach out and embrace the Cory Brooks of this world, the first thing they do is go to the civil rights leaders and invite them to conferences or make contributions to them and hold them up. This has been my biggest struggle within the conservative movement, but for them to keep sacrificing old friends to appease old enemies.
Yeah. No, I think the criticism of the conservative donor class is, I think it's spot on. I really do. Great insights as always. Bob Woodson, founder and president of the Woodson Center, 1776 Unites as well, author of the book Red, White, and Black, Rescuing American History from Revisionists and Race Hustlers. Bob, thanks as always. Appreciate your time.
And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Woodford.
Bob Woodson joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J is Charles Thomas, former ABC 7 political reporter and radio talk show host.
Sprinting on the home stretch.
There we go. All right. We have... more from Putin's sit-down with Tucker Carlson, including his contention, I'm talking about Putin's, that the invasion of Crimea in 2014, they didn't start that. The subsequent invasion of Ukraine in 2022, they didn't start that. This was all triggered first by a coup that ousted Yanukovych, the prime minister at the time, then the rejection of the Minsk agreements by Ukraine and by extension the West, the push, the rejection of the Minsk agreements by the West and vis-a-vis the NATO expansion east is essentially the argument that he makes. Here's him making it.
They included lots of elements of those Donbas territories' independence. That's true. However, I was absolutely confident, and I'm saying this to you now. I honestly believe that if we managed to convince the residents of Donbas, and we had to work hard to convince them to return to the Ukrainian statehood, then gradually the wounds would start to heal. When this part of territory reintegrated itself into common social environment, when the pensions and social benefits were paid again, all the pieces would gradually fall into place. No, nobody wanted that. Everybody wanted to resolve the issue by military force only. But we could not let that happen. And the situation got to the point when the Ukrainian side announced, no, we will not do anything. They also started preparing for military action. It was they who started the war in 2014.
So it was Ukraine and its Western sponsors that were the aggressors. That's his story. Now let's get reaction to that story that Putin is telling. Rebecca Koffler is a strategic military intelligence officer. She's also the author of Putin's Playbook, Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America. She served as a top analyst for Russia warfighting strategy in the Defense Intelligence Agency. And her newsletter for independent thinkers is cuttothenews.com, cuttothenews.com. Rebecca Koffler, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Dan.
So your reaction to the version of events that brought us to this place with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, your reaction to Putin's version of those events?
Well, everyone knows that Putin authorized the invasion of Ukraine, and Russia did that on February 24th, 2022. What Putin meant when he was accusing the West of initiating the invasion is his motivation for doing that. And his motivation is to restore what Russia believes its strategic security perimeter, of which Ukraine is part of, and that strategic security perimeter since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, reduced from 1,000 miles between NATO, which is an adversarial alliance created specifically with the purpose of countering the USSR, it reduced to 100 miles. That is less than between Washington and New York. And no sane military commander would allow this sort of proximity, including if the United States were faced with the possibility of having China or Russia as close as Mexico or Canada. We wouldn't allow that. And that's what Putin means. But he likes to accuse the West of things, and he wants to manipulate everyone's opinions. And that's his style as a former KGB intelligence officer.
Well, right. So, but I mean, in terms of the accuracy that it was a coup, and then it was the failure to NATO expansion east. That was a broken promise. In point of fact, he actually told a story about his conversation he allegedly had with Bill Clinton before he was out the door at the turn of the century, and just before the turn of the century, that would there be any possibility for Russia to join NATO? And Bill Clinton said, I don't know, maybe. Then he came back to him later. This is according to Putin. Came back to him later, said, no, that's a non-starter. So Putin wanted to be a peacemaker between the EU and America and the East, and he was rebuffed. And then there were broken promises in terms of we won't expand NATO eastward. And then that happened multiple times in terms of the inclusion of new countries. And that takes us all the way to this coup in Ukraine that ousted Yanukovych, and then the failure to abide Ukraine to abide the Minsk agreement. I mean, so that's his run up. That's his explanation. Every turn I tried to be a peacemaker, I tried to have rapprochement with the West, and I was rebuffed or they lied to me. The accuracy of that characterization of world events over the last 20 years.
So Putin is never a peacemaker. It's just simply not his style. He's a former KGB officer who was trained and on the idea that USA was always adversary number one, glavny protivnik in Russian, of USSR and now Russia. And for decades, Russia was preparing for a war that it believes is inevitable. That's the assessment of the Russian general staff. It's inevitable between the United States and Russia over the control of what Moscow perceives its strategic security perimeter, which is all the former Soviet states. And so everything that Putin says is within that context. Yes, NATO indeed has expanded to include multiple states that were part of USSR's sphere of influence most importantly, the Baltics. But the Russians don't have claims on the Baltics. They would never, you know, attack Lithuania, Latvia, or Estonia. But Putin drew the red line with Ukraine and Georgia. And so, so yes, the confrontation has been brewing between the two. We were on the
I understand that, but
the past 2 decades. Yeah,
I understand, but he's saying the West is the aggressor and the instigator, and I want you to react to whether or not that is a fair assessment, or if that's just
West,
if that's propaganda.
Of course, it's propaganda. Everything
right.
that Putin says okay. is propaganda. It doesn't mean that it's not true that NATO has expanded to include those states, right? Everything Putin says is supposed to manipulate the opinion of both his domestic audience and Americans.
Right.
And no, NATO is not an aggressor. NATO never invaded Russia. But what Putin is fearing, and that's kind of some people call it the Russian paranoia, is a potential fragmentation of Russia. And there's indeed a plan that the United States has for decades to democratize Russia, and that is viewed as a threat. So did the coup take place in Ukraine? Absolutely, yes. Victoria Nuland, the former
right.
Assistant Secretary of State under Clinton, acknowledged that we spent $5 billion trying to democratize Ukraine. And that's just a standard playbook of Washington establishment. We try to democratize every nook and cranny of the world, even, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, the countries in whose history there's nothing that points to the fact that they could possibly be democracy. And so, and that's, you know, that's a fact.
Then
I get
what you're saying. Then when Putin says to Tucker Carlson's question, do you have any designs on the Baltics or Poland? Do you have any designs beyond Ukraine? And he sort of gives it a chuckle and the back of the hand. No, of course not. I have no designs beyond this beyond my interest in Ukraine, which was sort of. Not quite. He never really got around to answering the question, though, it was posed to him, whether he's satisfied with the Donbass region that he occupies or he wants the entirety of Ukraine. So what's your assessment of the larger question? What's your assessment of his expansionist desires and willingness to pursue those desires? Is it limited at eastern Ukraine? Is it all of Ukraine? Do you think he moves, if he was to conquer Ukraine, to the Baltics, to Poland, to Hungary, to more of Eastern Europe?
Here's my official intelligence assessment. Putin does not have plans, and there's no intelligence to support the analysis that Putin wants to invade the Baltics, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, or any other NATO country, including Poland. Putin is not suicidal. The United States and NATO enjoy an overwhelming conventional superiority over Russia. Okay? It would be foolish for Putin, and he's not a fool. He's a highly intelligent person. He's rational. No, that is not on the table. But when it comes to Ukraine, Georgia, he will not spare anything, any resources, any lives. And as we know, the Russian armed forces are 3 times larger than Ukrainians. Ukrainian, you know, victory is just simply mathematically impossible. Would Putin accept only eastern Ukraine and settle the conflict? In the beginning of the war, my intelligence analysis was that yes, because things did not go well for Putin, or as fast as he was hoping to. At this point, my analysis has changed. I don't believe Putin will be satisfied with only eastern Ukraine. Why is that? It's because, again, he's a rational thinker. He has assessed what our capabilities are, and regretfully, the Pentagon has emptied out practically our weapons arsenal, having funneled $200 billion worth of equipment to Ukraine. We're also having trouble recruiting our own armed forces, you know, because of various, you know, reasons.
Right.
The Pentagon is trying to brainwash with Marxist ideologies our military officers and all of those things. Also, our economy, the sanctions backfired at us. We also have an election season. And also the reason Biden, in the very beginning, stated very clearly that he would never deploy U.S. forces into the theater in Ukraine is because, you know, he boxed himself in, because Russia has developed a highly sophisticated strategy that includes tactical nuclear weapons and cyber weapons, and they hold U.S. homeland at risk. And I've written a lot about it on Fox News website, in New York Post, and I have another piece coming up next week on Russian cyber capabilities. So right now, I think not only Putin wants the entire Ukraine, not to absorb it as part of Russia, but what he wants is control over it. He wants regime change.
Client state.
And he also wants to humiliate NATO. He wants Biden and NATO to beg him to settle. Because, again, Russia enjoys an overwhelming military and economic advantage over Ukraine. And we, while we were bleeding Russia, we are also bleeding ourselves out. And Putin believes that he is in a good position to negotiate right now.
Rebecca Koffler, strategic military intelligence officer, author of the book Putin's Playbook, Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America. She served as a top intelligence analyst for Russian warfighting strategy in the Defense Intelligence Agency. And her newsletter is cuttothenews.com. Rebecca Koffler, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And she joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Top of the morning, it's that time of the week. Dan and Charles Thomas in for Amy J. Today, it is Open Mic Friday. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Taking your calls with comments, compliments, concerns, criticisms, general crack pottery, we'll take it all.
This is one of my favorite times of the week whenever I'm here.
It's fun, isn't it?
I love this.
It's fun. We get a wide range of thought and opinion on a wide range of issues. And, of course, Open Mic Friday is sponsored by turnkey.pro. And so we kick it off with Turnkey.pro founder David Kolsak. David?
Good morning. I'm actually in your neck of the woods right now. I'm at the Strand Golf Course crashing a John Perdue Club golf outing. So very cool.
Look at you hanging with the big cats. All right, very good.
Well, I guess, you know, and I went to a grocery store last night here, and it's called Seed to Table. Have you been there?
I have. Alfie Oaks is a bit of an institution in Southwest Florida. As is that
place. I will say, it's the coolest thing. I mean, it's like a nightclub within a grocery store. I think we need more of those in the Chicago area. I think it would be crazy. But anyway.
He has happened upon a keen insight into the grocery store business, no question.
Hey, what's the weather
it's
out?
Quite amazing.
Right now.
The weather down here is about 75 and sunny, and it's beautiful. And if you hear, like, golf clubs and, you know, cracking into balls here in the background, it's all on me. But I'm headed back to Chicago where I hear it's 55 and balmy, so that's good.
Yeah, it's a nice day, supposedly a nice day. I haven't been outside.
Well, anyway, so I wanted to call in this morning and talk. First of all, Nikki Haley lost to nobody in Nevada, and she won't back out. That's interesting to see.
Yeah.
And I really honestly want to talk about the weather a little bit. Did you know that Toronto only had 30 hours of actual sunlight in the month of January? That seems to be a record for me. In fact, I don't remember January in the Chicago area, and I know, Dan, you're in Florida a lot, but it was really cloudy in January, and it's interesting to me that we went through a very similar stretch like Toronto. We had very little sunshine, and it was dreary and depressing, and I know for myself I don't do very well without seeing the sun. Anyway, And I'm sure other people feel that way. But that brings me to talk about something that I'm sure people see but don't really react to. When I was a kid, I remember seeing clouds in the sky and finding different shapes within them. Remember, there was a Simpsons episode where Bart looked in the sky and he saw an elephant on a skateboard smoking a cigarette. And, you know, I thought that was, like, hilarious, that particular thing. But I remember studying cumulonimbus clouds, stratus clouds, cirrus clouds, and all that stuff that we studied in school. But I never... they never had a name for the kind of clouds that ran in a straight line and came out of airplanes. Usually the contrails of an airplane dissipate in a few minutes. I knew this was going to get you there.
Oh,
right,
God.
Right?
We're going to do vapor trails. Okay.
No, chemtrails is what they call them.
Yeah, whatever.
And, we never saw Bob Ross paint chemicals in his paintings, but, you know, they were always puffy clouds. But recently,
happy little trees.
Mm-hmm. And New Hampshire actually banned geoengineering, but they didn't admit to banning chemtrails. If you ask Alexa if chemtrails are real, you might find an interesting answer. But no matter what Alexa or the New York Times publication may say, just look in the sky and look for yourself. These crisscross patterns in the sky are not normal. They're not made by God. They're not by Mother Nature. They're made by planes. So I would implore you to look in the sky and recognize what's happening. I have no idea who would authorize anyone to fly a mission and put particles that either dim the sun or whatever Bill Gates suggests, but I have no idea what kind of a person would actually pilot those types of missions and what kind of end game that might be. But just look in the sky on any day, and you'll most likely see some chemtrails, and you can usually, you know, certainly deny that there's something nefarious there, but you can't deny that they're actually there. So anyway, cognitive dissonance happens when people experience mental stress when exposed to information that's inconsistent with their beliefs or ideals. So in this case, if you believe that chemtrails are not real and some conspiracy theory, then seeing themselves for yourself, and if you take note of them, make you feel uneasy. So I'm imagining, Dan, later on today, you're going to be in Naples and you're going to look up and you're going to see some chemtrails.
I've seen them before, but, you know, this is the whole point of these sort of open-ended conspiracy theories, is you have to start filling in the blanks or asking questions and then getting those blanks filled in with something. You can't just say, I see something that is unusual, therefore I know it's a plot to do something nefarious. That doesn't work.
And I don't even know if it's a plot to do something nefarious. I'm just saying it's a plot to do something, and it's kind of just, you know, again, it's skeptical because there's so many things going on, like from Lahaina to Peru with fires and the rain in L.A. and hundreds of fires that I saw on the way into Florida just a couple days ago. I saw hundreds of fires burning, and I don't know if those are controlled fires or whatever, but it just seems strange to me to see literally the whole landscape having all kinds of things. But either way, believe me, don't believe me, call me a crackpot, but chemtrails are not natural, and we should at minimum take note of them. And I want to mention one other thing, and Joe Buck said, there's going to be some story, there's going to be something big that happens because it's Vegas, and it won't stay in Vegas. It's going to be something big. I don't know what it is. I have no idea. I just think we're going to have a mess in my mind. So I don't know what that's all about, but it's a pretty daunting statement, and who knows what
Tom,
Joe Buck's alluding to.
Tell me you're not on the Taylor Swift as a psyop bandwagon.
You know, I'm really not. I think she's a Satanist. How about that? I'll go with that.
Well, I don't know what she is, but I know she's. I know the Jesse Waters reporting and stuff is embarrassing, and
it's a little over the top. But you know, yes. I'll be watching the Super Bowl this time with my family and friends. But instead of betting on the number, you know, the points and all that stuff, we're going to be betting on the number of satanic references that'll be made during the halftime performance. You know, remember Beyonce's halftime show? How about the Weeknd?
How about the Weeknd? Oh, the Weeknd was crazy. Yeah, Weeknd
was
wild.
Satanic.
I don't know about Usher though. I have higher expectations for Usher. We'll see.
I do too. I hope there are no malfunctions with wardrobes. So anyway, I certainly hope it's another just a football game and it's just another cloud. But you know,
are you gonna miss
trails from jets aren't normal.
Are you going to miss Biden not doing the Super Bowl interview? Did you have action on that, whether he would or he wouldn't?
You know what? I have a hard time listening to him talk about anything. So
yes,
But I would have actually tuned into that. That would have been interesting to watch.
Yes.
Guys have a great weekend.
David. You too. Safe travels back to the Windy City. David Kolsek. You know, speaking of the Simpsons and Clouds too, I mean, it's perfectly segues to Joe Biden and his performance yesterday. Remember the old man yells at cloud is the head story, and it's grandpa yelling at a cloud. And that was sort of like Joe Biden yesterday yelling at a CNN reporter.
Mr. President, for months when you were asked about your age, you would respond with the words, watch me. Watch. Many American people have been watching, and they have expressed concerns about your age.
That is your judgment. That is your judgment. That is not the judgment of the press.
They express concerns about your mental acuity. They say that you are too old. Mr. President, in December, you told me that you believe there are many other Democrats who could defeat Donald Trump. So why does it have to be you now? What is your answer to that question?
Because I'm the most qualified person in this country to be president of the United States and finish the job I started.
All right. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Let's go to the phone lines. Ron on the south side.
Hey, Dan and Charles, just enjoyed the show so much. And Charles, I really appreciate you when you were on. Very, very similar in our perspective as black men, and I'm similar age. I'm retired. But I'm also happy that you're not in the studio because you'd be sitting next to Crypto Dan, and I would have to be.
Crypto, yes, I'm a crypto conservative. That's right. I'm glad you remember that. Yeah. I'm scared. Yeah, I'm frightening. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, so I would have to be a little concerned about
that. I've been inoculated.
Okay. Okay. But no, guys, I enjoy Dan, you know, every day and stuff, but certainly because Charles brings a different perspective, very similar to mine. Again, you know,
yes. I've been
in conservatives, and we're both retired, and I just enjoyed you all. You all have a wonderful weekend, Dan. I'll be talking to you next week.
Amen. Thanks for the call, Ron. Appreciate that. Karen and Beecher.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to first of all tell you that you guys are my favorite breakfast combo. You just really bring me into the day, filling me with so much information. But also, too, if I may go back to yesterday when you were talking about the Three Amigos, I would like to suggest that it is the Three Stooges. Now, I don't know a lot about them. My husband's a big fan. But because you have a Mo, you have a Curly, and then you have a Shep. I think that's his name.
Well, you're leaving out Larry, and so that's going to rankle some Stooges scholars.
Man.
Yeah.
Larry guy.
And then what do you do about Joe? And that's a dangerous topic to get into with the Stooges purists, Karen. So that's why I steered clear of the Stooges and I went with the Three Amigos.
Oh, okay. I get that.
Yeah.
But also, too, I would have liked in the Tucker Carlson interview with Putin, I would have liked for him to go down like a Barbara Wawa aisle and ask Putin, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
Yeah. How about thanks for the call, Karen. How about a Tabitha Sorn moment? Boxers or briefs, Vlad? Wouldn't that have been fun? You know, make it kitschy like those debate moderators do in presidential debates because we're such a serious country. Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning, Dan, Charles. Great show as usual.
Good morning.
And I respect both of you as very intelligent people, but something baffled me yesterday. I was watching Hannity. They had Alan Dershowitz on. He was talking about the report that came out and the Biden interview or, you know, news conference. And I got the impression that Alan Dershowitz, as smart as he is, was thinking of voting for Biden until that time. And I was baffled by that. Can he see the destruction, corruption, and incompetence of this guy? I mean, how could somebody that smart even contemplate voting for that guy?
I know. We had Dershowitz on a couple weeks back now, so this is obviously before the Robert Hur report that was released yesterday. And, I mean, he said the same thing to us, and it's, you know, he goes chapter and verse on how these are bad actors engaged of all sorts of bad acts. And then he says, but, you know, I'm still a Democrat, so... as long as he doesn't completely go south on Bibi and eradicating Hamas, I'm sticking with him is basically his posture. It's tough. I mean, this conversation, Charles, we have all the time. You were mentioning it the other day. You know, people that are dyed in the wool on the left and they find, you know, Republican, they bought into all the vilification of Republicans as, you know, as hateful, racist, xenophobic, blah, misogynistic, blah, 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 monsters, and they don't want you to succeed. And so You don't go there. You don't go from there to where Dan Proft is. You go from where they are on the left to the middle.
You got to go to the middle first.
Right? It's a process.
Yeah, you got to go to the middle first. Get them off that Democrat.
Democrat.
Yeah. They got to get them off the. You got to rehab them slowly. Get them into the middle where they can listen to both sides of the issue, and then common sense prevails. And you know, you got this 82-year-old guy with a bad memory, and he's got a guy behind him with the football. Come on, America.
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding. You gotta be kidding.
Yeah, you have. It's a deprogramming. You know, think about having to send a van to kidnap your kid who became a Scientologist and is hanging out with Tom Cruise. You got to kidnap them, get them in the van. It's a process. Yeah. Corey in Woodlawn.
Hey, fellas. Good, happy Friday. I did want to make a comment about the Corey Brooks. I know Corey Brooks personally. I've talked to him several times. But I don't like in our neighborhood we have so many of these institutions growing. Like Corey Brooks wanted to tell you, in the 3-block radius, there's 3 other community centers growing up. Sunshine Ministry, Jennifer Maddox, and his. And that's in a very small footprint in the neighborhood. We have too many of these institutions. So if you go to guidestar.org, you type in Woodlawn, over 300-400 registered non-for-profits. But you do realize that the families are getting weaker. Homes are getting more and more dilapidated with the exception of public housing. So we've got a bigger issue in our neighborhood, and I don't think these centers are going to fix it. I think we have to figure out how to fix people and individual families and give them support, because these centers are going to get big, but these individual families are going to continue to get weaker. Thanks, guys.
That's a good point.
I love that. I love
that's
that.
A good
you
point.
You fix the family, particularly in the black community. You start fixing the family. You start fixing everything, crime, economics, all of it, by restoring the family. And I don't hear enough conversation about that. In fact, when you bring it up, that's when people really push back at you. Those the Democrats, they push back when you start talking about family. That's when you really become a sellout. And I'm telling you that fix the family, you fix the community, you fix the state, you fix the city, you fix the country.
Yeah, I mean, I of course I agree with that, but I think in addition to that, I should say, what Corey is pointing out is something that is a little bit below the fold, but it's really a keen insight, which is, you know, there's this poverty bureaucracy, right? Poverty is their business, and so government money flows through these nonprofits. I mean, I'm not targeting anybody in particular, but I mean, you watch what BLM Brandon is doing, right? It's millions more for so-called violence interrupters. And that sounds good. Some may be real. Some may be less real. It's the same thing with a lot of these C3s. They see that government will give grants to C3s, that other foundations that are well-heeled will give grants to C3s, particularly in neighborhoods that are blighted or have endemic violence problems. And so you're funding a bureaucracy, but you're not doing anything to grow institutions that are foundational for a particular neighborhood or community. And this is why I actually do like Corey Brooks's approach at Project Hood as compared to some of the others, because there are courses on entrepreneurship. There's other things going on. It's not just giving kids a place to safely play basketball or volleyball or whatever. It is life skills. It is doing for them what CPS is not, but then also the next step of being a business owner or being a professional that maybe ultimately will be a business owner, but be in a position to be self-sustaining and get engaged in their community and so forth. So he is pointing to something in terms of how we think about things. It all sounds good, but you have to look at the details, the concentration, and distinguish the wheat from the chaff with nonprofits. As just like anything else. Tara and Elgin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. I moved to Texas because I don't live in Illinois anymore. But okay. I just wanted to tell you that I was watching the Putin or listening to it yesterday, watching it. And, you know, I'm 55. I've been involved since Reagan in politics, you know, just listening and being aware. And by the end of the interview, I was like, that is a well thought out guy. He's serious. He kept talking about the, the unseriousness of us and what are we, a kindergarten playground? And when I thought about Hillary Clinton and her big reset button and thought, how unserious was that? But anyway, after listening to the interview, stumbled upon Mr. Jones, the movie on whatever it's on, and about the Ukraine famine in right before World War II, and how they were saying that there's no famine, everybody's happy, everybody's good, and then you go in there and they're all eating their dead brothers. But spoiler alert. But anyway, the point of the story, and then you go to the chemtrails and you think, clearly we have the technology to do that. And if it helps us say that the climate change is real, do you put it past anybody to do it? So I'm not a conspiracy theorist. But I stopped being surprised when Clinton was in office. Okay, that's all I can say.
Thanks for the culture. Well, I mean, Putin is definitely a serious guy. And it was interesting to hear from Rebecca Koffler, too, who we spoke with at the top of the hour, this idea that he's, you know, all talk about propaganda, all these, you know, tabloid reports. He's on his deathbed. There's a palace coup that he's a madman and so forth. No, he's a bad man. He's a bad man. He's a dictator. He's an autocrat. He's a thug. He's a bad man, but he's not a mad man. He's rational and sober and motivated.
You know, Dan, there's something else we have to think about, and that is, how are these dueling narratives, Putin versus Biden or the Washington establishment, how is it playing around the world? I think we're discounting that when we really shouldn't. Because what are we, 5%, 4% of the world's population? We've got all these other countries, particularly those that are involved in this BRICS thing now, and which includes China and India, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, how is it playing around the world? And how is that going to affect our long-term role?
How is Biden's performance last night playing around the world?
It's killing us. I'm telling you.
How is that? How is that being received in Moscow, in Beijing, and Tehran? Yeah. Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, good morning. I was wanting to hear Tucker ask Putin, when he's ripping his shirt off, buttons or snaps. But I thought, no, that's dumb. The better question is, in donkey basketball with his ex-KGB guys, is he shirts or skins? And then I thought, that's pretty obvious, too. The question that I really wanted to know is, what is his preferred method of killing dissidents? Like a two-part nerve agent, radiation, or just a Makarov to the back of the head as you step out of your apartment or a hotel room? That was lacking. Fascinating interview, especially the 30-minute digression on the history of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
But on a more serious note, no, let's not go there. We'll save serious for next week. I've been kind of busy. I have a suggestion for the Naperville people, because I heard the virtue signaling weenies that spoke at the council meeting. Yeah. So in order to feed the Biden buddies, which are now going to be around, I'm thinking – typically, the Biden buddies, they congregate around places like train stations, public ones. I'm bringing in this week, look for it this weekend, those ice cream cone vending machines so you can put in some migrant munchies. And then your children can help feed these people. You have to remember, though, open palm, keep it flat. All right. So as the Naperville people are entertaining themselves with their migrant pets walking around their virtue signaling town center, they have a safe way to feed them with migrant munchy cones. I was inspired by a trip to the zoo recently, and I thought, that's brilliant. We've got to bring this into Naperville.
Yeah, very good, Ralph. Thanks for that. The Biden buddies and the migrant munchies. Yeah. No, it's a wonderful marketing opportunity, and there's nobody better at branding than Ralph from Rantoul. It would have been fun, actually, if Tucker would have taken, before he took a drink of the glass of water that was there on the table for him, if he would have said, there's no dioxin in this, right? You're not, you know, one of those. That could have been a moment. Owen in Willowbrook.
Hello, Dan. Hey, I got a question for you. If Trump went around campaigning that he recently met with Khrushchev and Fidel Castro, and that he confused names of countries. Do you think he could still run for president but get Jack Smith to drop charges?
Right. Thanks for the call, Owen. Right. It was uproarious when SNL picked up on Trump's some sort of confusing Nikki Haley for Nancy Pelosi when he was rattling off about January 6th. But when Joe Biden is calling Francois Mitterrand and Helmut Kohl, who died about 25 years ago, as character witnesses for him, we're not supposed to take any notice of that. By the way, on Nikki Haley, since David Kolsak brought it up as well, she lost to none of the above in Nevada there. Sean Farish, he's this Trump impersonator. He's the best one out there. Have you heard this guy, Charles?
Oh, yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah, this is great. So he's so good. So he had a riff on Haley's loss to none of the above. Pretty good.
Nikki Haley, I call her Nimrod Nimrata, ought to be embarrassed. She lost to none of the above. How do you do that? She lost to none of the above. It's more embarrassing than Paul Pelosi in his underwear at 3 a.m. with a hammer. You know what I'm talking about. More embarrassing than Crooked Joe on a flight of stairs or a bicycle. More embarrassing than Pocahontas' DNA test. The results, Pocahontas, she's a fake Indian, Chief Laiowafa. More embarrassing than Eric Swalwell on national TV. That's why we call him his flatulence. He's a terrible person. It's so embarrassing. Nikki, oh, Nikki, you're so bad. You're so bad, it's really sad. Oh, Nikki, it's time to drop out. Nimrod Nimrata lost to none of the above. Nobody's ever lost like that before. What a disgrace, believe me.
The only thing missing are the hand gestures when he's speaking.
Yeah.
That's but classic.
The cadence and the tone, I mean, the timbre, just perfect. Nails. Nailed it, I should say. Eduardo, Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Dan and Charles, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment shortly that the retailers are moving away from the big cities and to the suburbs because of the crime that's happening in the cities.
No question about it. Thanks for the call.
Did you see that, I think it was Channel 32 report? I mean, Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Local Fox, 460 some cars stolen in 1 week in Chicago. 462 automobile car thefts in 1 week in the city of Chicago. Reported.
It's working. Everything's working. Crime's coming down. Don't you worry about it. That's what we're told. The Irish Prime Minister out of Ogden Dunes, Indiana.
Oh, Dan, and the great Charles Thomas, brother of Clarence and cousin of Isaiah. I heard that after his morning constitutional, but before he was helped on with the defense, Joe Biden this morning said about that special counsel, with friends like him, who needs enemas? Now, you two are well-versed in the great Irish literary tradition. Hey, I've got a short poem that both exposes Chicago's white media patriarchy, Dan, and it throws a lifeline to the Chicago mayor. And after all, to paraphrase old Mayor Daley, himself a great Irishman, if you can't be racist to your own family, who can you be racist to? Roses are red. Violets are blue. If you had a black wife raising three black kids, you'd be a mess too. Roses are red, but the media is fake. Mayor has a black wife raising three black kids, so cut him a break. Thank you, guys.
Hey, man. Boy. In about 4 or 5 weeks, about 5 weeks from now, right? He's going to be.
Thanks for the call, Kevin.
Right there.
Not exactly William Butler Yeats there with the poetry, but, all right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Kip in Stillman Valley.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call, Dan. Charles, nice to hear your input. You guys are great together too.
Thank you.
As Amy, but listen, special prosecutor on Biden, I'm not satisfied with, and I hope the Republicans in Congress and the Senate aren't satisfied with it either. Everybody's missing the point. When he had these secret documents, he was not president. And he's got those illegally. I think with Trump, with him being president and having maybe some classified documents, he's or may not. We don't really know. And we don't really know what classified documents Biden really had. I think that this is just a hurry up and get it off. Like Biden said, the case is over. It's a done deal. And everybody forget about it. I don't think so. So I would hope to hear more about this in the days to come. Thank you very much. Have a great Super Bowl weekend.
You too, Cap.
Does it really make a difference? It's all political. All of these cases. If Donald Trump was playing golf every day at Mar-a-Lago and he had no intention to run for election, re-election or whatever, we wouldn't hear anything about any of this. This would be nothing. But it's politics. It's all politics.
Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Dan, Charles, I just want to compliment you on keeping a show that's engaging and entertaining with such a low, slow news week. There weren't many things happening.
Yeah, right.
But I did want to say, one of the things that Charles talked about, the foundation is the family. That's the foundational institution. But you've got to build people of character. They're going to start that family, and that starts by education. And I think what you're talking about, the bureaucracies right now are geared towards dependents. Hopefully we work back eventually to get the school choice options, because that's what's going to give people opportunities to build character. Then when they get married, they have good families.
Well, right.
And I don't think it's.
Yeah. I mean, no dependents, no bureaucracy, no jobs.
I mean,
right.
They have incentives to keep that. And I think it's, as far as the conspiracy thing, this was all set up, I don't think it's so much conspiracies. I think it's incompetence. We have incompetent people in government that are incentivized to keep the bureaucracies going. And to change that, get involved locally. Get involved, find out in your precinct area, get involved locally. Because as you've stated, the GOP is incompetent as well. And a lot of people who listen to you are educated and informed by listening to you, and then they can get involved in the precinct level to find out what's going on.
Thanks, Kevin. Rich, Indian Head Park.
Yeah, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Charles. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good.
I just have a quick question. If the Supreme Court strikes down this Colorado thing of stopping Trump from being on the ballot, does that mean that that will stop all other states from doing the same? After all, Trump is not going to be able to run for a third term.
Right. Thanks for the call, Rich. I mean, functionally, yes. Technically, no. Because, I mean, it depends what the majority opinion is. And, if there is an enterprising leftist-backed person or group in a particular state that wants to come up with a novel argument that is not spoken to by the opinion in the Colorado case. I mean, there's always the possibility. There are always paths to the courthouse. But, I mean, functionally, it ends the silliness, at least for this cycle, a Supreme Court decision, particularly if it's as anticipated, 8-1 or 9-0. Chuck in Delavan, Wisconsin.
Thanks for mentioning my band, Functionally Yes. Hey, tomorrow, 1
great
to
yes
3,
tribute,
everybody,
yeah.
Yes, great. From 1 to 3, tomorrow, DJ's in the drink. It's on the north end of Como. I'm going to be there. I'm in another chili cook-off. I won first place last week, and I'm making the exact same thing. I had Inner Mongolian chickens flown in. I butchered them. I got them all cooking right now today. That's what I'm doing. So make sure you're there from 1 to 3 to vote on me.
Chuck from Delavan is not the owner of A Lonely Heart. Much better than the owner of A Broken Heart.
So is that chicken chili? It's chili.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm not sure if Chuck from Delavan knows either, actually. Charles Thomas, thanks so much for sitting in.
Man, it was great being
much
here.
Of the week.
It was great being here these few days. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. Very good time. And thank you for everybody who called in and everybody who tuned in. Have a great weekend. Go 49ers. Chiefs. Now we turn it over to Mike Scott for the news. I know. Sorry, Charles. I know. I'm done with Mahomes and company.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.